Since the beginning, we've only really told one story on The Pitch: what it's like to start and raise money for a startup. But what about the rest of the journey? What happens after you raise the money? We all know that the goal of a startup is to eventually exit. But when do you exit? For how much? And how do you know who to sell to? What if they completely ruin the thing you've spent years of your life building? We've all seen that story play out. And what does it even mean to exit? It all sounds so final, like you just walk out the door straight onto your new yacht. But for the people involved, it's not that simple at all. We wanted to talk to startup founders who've actually done it. How does it feel to finally accomplish the dream? And is that dream all it's cracked up to be? This is a special segment we're calling The Exit. Today, how Bill Smith, a high school dropout from Birmingham, Alabama, started, scaled, and sold Shipt for $550 million in 3 years. I'm Josh Muccio. On The Pitch, real startup founders pitch real investors for real money. And on The Exit, we tell the rest of the story. Here we go.
The company just exploded overnight.
What did you think going into that suite? Did you feel like a big deal?
No, I didn't. I felt like a little guy. I didn't have a feel for the game, but I figured it out really fast.
What did you think when he threw out the number?
I ran the company out of money, almost completely out of money. I know my CFO and everybody was thinking, this is nuts.
Oh, Shipt.
This is a life-changing amount of money. This makes sense to do this deal because once I've done this deal, then on the next company or the next one, I can hold the cards as long as I want to.
Do you have any regrets about Shipt? Our first exit interview with serial entrepreneur Bill Smith is coming up after this. This episode of The Pitch is brought to you exclusively by State Farm. We hear a lot of pitches on this show. I mean, no surprise there. It's the name of the podcast. But the entrepreneurs who come on this show, they're pitching more than just a business idea. They're pitching their dream. Because when you run a small business, you're putting your whole self into it. State Farm gets that, and they work with small business owners across the country to help create personalized plans that are built for their small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Welcome back to The Exit. Growing up in rural Alabama, Bill Smith's career started young. At age 11, he worked at the Country Mall. It was the kind of place where customers kept a tab in a spiral-bound notebook. But even at that age, Bill Smith knew he wouldn't always be working for someone else.
I always thought I would be an entrepreneur. My father was and still is an entrepreneur. And I grew up seeing him build businesses. I used to love to go to work with him. When I was 5 years old, I asked my parents to give me a briefcase for my birthday. I pretty much always thought I'd be a business person. I never really liked school, and I got bored very easily with school. So I started selling cell phones on the side when I was 16.
Is this in the 2000s, early 2000s?
This was 2000. Yeah. So I would get out of school and drive my minivan to the car dealerships in the area and sell phones to all of the new car salesmen. And I was making $5,000 a month selling these phones. And then I decided, hey, I'm going to go out and lease an office space. So I was at the Waffle House reading the classifieds, looking at office space. I saw an office space that was $300 a month. And it said it had new paint and new carpet, and went and signed a lease and secured an office space.
At 16?
Yes. Without telling my parents, by the way.
What?
I stopped showing up at school, and it took about 2 weeks, surprisingly, for the school to reach out to my father and say, hey, Bill hasn't been to school. And I said, oh gosh, this is going to happen now. This is going to hit the fan. And I was concerned about what the consequences were going to be of what I had done.
Was your dad mad?
I know he was upset, and he was going to take my car away. He was ready to try to use leverage to get me back to school and get me back on track. So he wanted me to go to the school with him to have a meeting at the counselor's office. And I sat down with the counselor by myself at first and told her what I had been doing and that I was selling phones and doing all this stuff. And then my dad came in the room and we started to talk. He said, "You've got to tell him that he has to come back to school."
Mm-hmm.
The counselor looked at my dad and said, "Look, we're not worried about Bill. He's going to be just fine."
You're kidding.
And that was pretty much the end of the meeting. And we started to talk about how I was going to get a GED. And I left that day and never turned back.
Do you remember how your dad reacted in the moment when the counselor said, "We're not worried about Bill. He's going to be fine"?
I think he knew that he had lost, because my mom was supportive. And then this counselor was saying, "Hey, we're good with this." So I think he just said, "All right, I've lost. I gotta go here."
That's crazy. I don't think I would let a kid do that.
I probably wouldn't either. And I've talked through this with my wife, who has a master's degree, and really she's actually a elementary educator. And we've talked about that a lot, and we definitely don't want our kids to follow that path. And somehow it worked out for me. I don't recommend it for others.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had a lot of things in my favor potentially, but you know, somehow it worked out.
Yeah. What ended up happening with that business?
Sold it.
Are you able to say for how much?
Not much. It wasn't much. That wasn't like some big win or anything.
But it was just enough money for Bill to go and start business number two with a small investment from his dad. This company, Insight, was in the prepaid cards business. They built software that allowed people without a bank account to get prepaid Visa cards. Bill had to up his game for Insight. He had to hire a team, build payment software, and convince big banks to partner with him, all in his late teens and early 20s. Insight got bigger, way bigger than Bill's little cell phone business, so big that others in the industry started to take notice.
So I was at a conference, a prepaid industry conference, and I'm hanging out at the booth. The CEO of a company called Green Dot walked up to the booth, and he, you know, Green Dot was the big dog in the industry. The CEO's name was Steve Street, and he introduced himself, and I told him about our business, and he said, "Oh, I'd love to talk to you more. Why don't we meet up in our hospitality suite this afternoon? When are you free?" And so we set a time, and I go into the hospitality suite.
What did you think going into that suite? Did you feel like a big deal?
No, I didn't. I felt like a little guy, because I knew they were a big public company. I told him about our business and our size. And before I even walked out of the room, he said, "Well, we're trying to grow in the space. We'd be interested in acquiring your business." And he just threw out a number to me and said, "You know, how does that sound? Is this something you might be interested in?" And I said, "Well, let me think about that a little bit." I didn't want to respond immediately. So I just said, "Hey, I'll get back to you." And that was the start of our relationship.
What did you think when he threw out the number? Was this like a life-changing dollar amount at this point?
Yeah, it was real dollars. I can tell you it was in the 8-digit range.
Mm-hmm.
So it was big. So I thought, man, this could be cool. And we ended up selling to them.
Wow.
But it didn't happen overnight. Whenever I've sold a business, they never happen fast.
Yeah.
It is very easy to get distracted and excited and thinking about what you're going to do with your millions.
Hmm.
But if you take your eye off the ball and the numbers turn or something changes, it's game over for that deal.
You can run your business into the ground when you're like almost at the finish line.
Yeah.
So you had your first exit at 18 years old, your second at 24. And then I think, was it 6 months later, you start another company. This one's called Shipt.
That's right.
What was the initial idea for Shipt?
I saw the creation of Uber and Lyft happening. And I remember taking my first Uber in DC. It was when it was only a black car. And I remember reading about Uber and Fortune or Forbes and talking about how people were taking black cars to the grocery store and things like that. And so I saw this on-demand economy being born, I recognized that I hated waiting for items I bought to be delivered, but I hated going to the store. So my thought was to create a platform for big box retailers to offer shipped at the checkout on their own website.
And you invested your own money from selling your last business, and you built the first version of an app.
I invested probably $1 million total to get to this point. Built the software platform, hired engineers. I bought billboards, 5 or 6 outdoor billboard ads.
Oh, wow.
All these things I had done to announce the launch of Shipt.
You were thinking big.
Oh, I thought it was going to be huge. I mean, we even spent time, how are we going to scale this from a software perspective? How we scale? How many transactions can we handle, et cetera?
How does the launch go?
Oh, it was horrible. I knew immediately that it wasn't going to work, because the way I launched it was you would go to shipt.com and tell us to pick up an order that you placed at Target, and we would go pick it up. So you'd have to order on Target's website, choose in-store pickup, and then go to Shipt and tell us to go get it for you.
Wait,
and I
what?
Couldn't give it away. I mean, yeah.
Wait.
Hard, so crazy to think of now, isn't it?
You'd have to go to the Best Buy website, buy something, then go to Shipt and say, hey, I bought something at Best Buy. Can you go get it for me?
That's exactly the way it would work.
Bill Smith takes a bad idea and turns it into a good one after the break. This episode of The Pitch is brought to you exclusively by State Farm. As rewarding as it may be, small business owners have a lot riding on their shoulders. It's a lot of stress to own, run, and grow your small business, not to mention finding someone who can give you the answers and support you need. But State Farm agents aren't just there to understand your small business needs. They're there to prioritize them and help create personalized plans with your needs in mind. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Welcome back to The Exit. Bill Smith's first version of Shipt was, well, a shipwreck. But there was one good thing he got out of it, a bunch of email addresses.
So I emailed every customer from my personal email address at Shipt and just said, hey, if you have any ideas or feedback, we're a startup, please tell me.
Yeah.
I kept having these people respond back and say, hey, it's cool that I can get a delivery from Best Buy, but I really just want my groceries delivered. And then at the same time, my wife and I had our second child, and I went to the grocery store for the first time with both kids on a Sunday, and one was crying, and it was a huge pain. And I was literally in the parking lot. I looked at my wife and said, people have been asking me to deliver groceries. Now I get it. I'm going to go figure out a way to do this.
Now I get it. I realize how bad it is to go grocery shopping with the kids.
Yes. It all kind of clicked in that moment in the Publix parking lot on a Sunday afternoon.
Do you like immediately go to grocery stores, or what do you do next?
The first thing I did was go back to the office on Monday morning and tell my team of 10 that what we're doing is not working, and I think grocery delivery might work. So before we write a single line of code, I want to see if I can get 1,000 people to sign up and pay for a one-year membership in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And this may not work out. If you guys are cool with that, please stick with me. If not, you're welcome to go get another job. But this is what we're going to try and do and see if we can make this work.
Wait, you actually said that? You're welcome to go get another job?
Yeah.
Did anybody take you up on that?
Not a single one.
Huh. All right. So you're going to try to get 1,000 people to sign up before you build the grocery delivery app. How did you go about testing that?
My CTO found a mobile developer to build a mock-up of the Shipt delivery app. And we hired a videographer. We spent $1,000 to shoot a low-quality video showing the delivery process. So we just put the video up and we put some ads on Facebook and said, grocery delivery is coming to Birmingham. Sign up now, save 50% on your membership. my goal was to sell 1,000. I think within 3 weeks we had sold 750 or something like that. A week later we were at 1,000, and that's when we stopped sales. We shut it off and said, okay, we're going to go build this and we're going to launch it in April.
When you saw all those people signing up, how did it feel?
Oh, it was amazing. It was the best feeling. I took screenshots of the progress along the way, and every time somebody signed up, I would get a Slack alert. I knew that I hit onto something that people really wanted because of the frequency of people signing up and paying money for something that didn't exist yet.
Yeah. How long did it take to actually build it?
3 months. We had to build a shopper app, a member app, and a back-end platform. And it was very hard. I mean, we had to manually build a catalog of every item in a grocery mm-hmm. store. We actually had to send people in with cameras to go take pictures of all the items. But we did everything we needed to in 3 months to launch the app and allow people to start placing orders.
Hmm. So I'm looking at the Facebook page for Shipt, and you can tell how quickly this thing blew up. Like, you start in Birmingham and suddenly, like, Shipt is everywhere. How many cities did you get to in year one?
15 cities. Shortly after we launched Birmingham, we said, all right, well, what are we launching next? I mean, it might have been 6 weeks later we were looking at launching the next city. We ran the same playbook in every market. We did a pre-sale campaign for memberships, half price if you signed up before launch. And we launched Nashville. It was great. We launched Dallas and it was a dud. Then we launched Tampa, and I call it, and my team, we all call it Kablampa, because 2,000 people signed up. We launched Miami. We had the same thing happen, 2,000 memberships before we launched. And that's when I knew, I mean, this is going to work. And the company just exploded overnight. I remember having to go in the office Saturday, Sunday, to answer the phones and talk to customers and shoppers and solve problems. We were all hands on deck just to handle the demand.
Why did you start with smaller cities instead of the classic New York or LA?
So at the time, there was a company called Instacart. They had raised something like $250 million before Shipt was even open. And they were very focused on the coast. They were New York, San Francisco, LA type markets, and they didn't do anything in the center of the country. So we just said, all right, well, we're just going to own the South and the center of the country, and we're going to focus on the rest of America. Because, you know, it turns out people in Grand Rapids, Michigan want groceries delivered just the same as someone in New York does. And even more than that, there's a lot more families in the middle of the country than there are in, you know, there's people with a bunch of kids, I thought. Mm-hmm. So it just worked out that way.
When did you decide, you know what, I need to start fundraising for Shipt?
So I went and raised $5 million from friends and family. And then I said, okay, well, I need to raise venture capital. I mean, this $5 million isn't going to take us very far.
How long did it last?
I mean, maybe 10 months, 9 months, something like that.
And were you just hiring like crazy?
We were hiring. We were losing money on every delivery, the customer acquisition. We had to have cash. Actually, there was just a working capital component where you have to pay for groceries before the customer pays you. And mm-hmm. there's all this float. There's a lot of payments problems, but luckily I'd been in the payments business, so I was able to figure those things out. But it took a lot of cash.
And then you realize, all right, we need more money. So you went out to Sand Hill Road.
So I flew to San Francisco for the first time. I asked for a few intros from friends. We got some desks at the WeWork at 2nd and Mission. I knew as soon as I started walking around San Francisco that this was going to be the place. You know, everybody's talking about tech. It was an entrepreneur's dream at the time to be there, I think. And then I started to try to raise capital.
Who do you pitch?
I remember pitching Excel and Bessemer and all of these big names. I didn't pitch Sequoia and Andreessen because they were invested in my biggest competitor. I remember going into Excel and they had logos on the wall for all these companies that they had backed. And you're just thinking, I mean, this is where so many great companies have been funded and created. It was a really cool thing. But I didn't have a feel for the game. You know, I'm not a West Coast type I didn't know the feel for how, you know, even how people dressed, and I'm Southern, so I sound a little different. So I just didn't get it. I mean, I remember showing up to my first pitch and I'm wearing a sport coat. I used to keep notes on a legal pad all the time, and I kept all these legal pads. I didn't have a feel for the game, but I figured it out really fast. I figured out, you know, this is a more relaxed culture.
Right.
And I adjusted quickly. But I pitched a lot of people and really had a very kind of a difficult time. This was raising our Series A. It was in the beginning of 2016, and there was a little bit of a downturn, and everybody just asked me about Instacart. That's all they wanted to talk about.
What did your pitch sound like? Like, if you could remember back to like the presentation you gave to those VCs.
Yeah, well, the pitch is we're offering 2-hour grocery delivery from your favorite grocery stores on a membership. So that was our differentiator, is you couldn't pay per delivery. You had to buy a $99 annual membership up front for it. And our other differentiator was we have these amazing shoppers. So at the time, the on-demand industry was starting to get a bad rap. Like companies like Uber and others were kind of getting a bad rap because people would say they didn't treat the drivers well, or they didn't have a high quality, or et cetera. Our model was, it was moms shopping for moms. That was my line. We screened all of them. We interviewed all of them. We wanted to make sure that the person shopping was like checking your avocados and delivering them into your home and giving you a great experience. And they really delivered, I think still to this day, the best customer experience of any on-demand company.
So was your pitch to these VCs like, we are not Instacart. Like, we are the opposite of Instacart. Yes, we're delivering groceries, but there's membership right from the start. We're not going to fall into the same issues with workers because we're treating people better. Was that really the pitch, or was it something bigger?
That was the pitch. It was really simple.
Did you eventually get someone to say yes?
We did. So my first partner was Graycroft. And they actually found us when we were raising the $5 million. And they ultimately didn't invest then because the terms, they said the terms weren't good.
I'm sure they kicked themselves when you came to them for the Series A.
Yeah, they still got a good deal though.
Do you remember what the valuation was at the Series A?
Yeah, it was, I think it was 65.
And how much did you raise?
20.
Okay. So $20 million. As you go back, you start putting that money to work. Were there any points where it felt like you weren't going to be able to make this business work?
So many times. I thought ship was going to die multiple times. I ran the company out of money, almost completely out of money. You know, this company's growing super fast. I mean, it probably grew 300% the second year and 300% the third year. The numbers were insane. So I remember we were working on closing the B, and we literally ran out of money to make payroll, and I had to fund it, you know, personally. I had to wire money in from my own bank account to cover payroll to get us through.
That's not a great feeling, because if that B doesn't come through, you're not getting that money back.
Exactly. It was crazy. I'm sure my management team was, you know, wigged out. I know my CFO and everybody was thinking, this is nuts. But, you know, I jumped in and covered it, and we got to the B and closed it.
So then in the summer of 2017, Amazon buys Whole Foods for $13.7 billion. Where were you when you saw the news?
So I am in Turks and Caicos with my family to celebrate my father's 60th birthday. And I remember at breakfast, I start getting news alerts from, you know, the Wall Street Journal and whatever other news outlets that Amazon is acquiring Whole Foods. And I thought, oh man, this is either going to be really good or really bad.
Oh, shipped.
I had board members calling me, asking me what I thought about it. And I would say the first day I was concerned.
Why were you concerned?
Amazon is incredible at execution. So I thought, you know, they're buying Whole Foods. They're very clearly going to go tackle grocery delivery, and they're going to just come and take everybody out. But then after a few days of thinking about it, I realized that this was actually going to create a huge opportunity for us. My customer wasn't really the Whole Foods customer. You know, I'm serving all types of families that, you know, buy all kinds of things and don't want to spend the kind of money that it takes to shop at Whole Foods, or Whole Wallet, as we called it back then. So, you know, I thought it was going to actually be harder than they realized to reposition that company and really kind of build a mainstream brand.
So you thought that this could actually help you. Was that right?
It did help us. One thing it did is it clearly communicated to everybody in the grocery industry that they needed to have an e-commerce and a delivery play. So everybody wanted to start figuring it out. And at the same time, people realized they needed to own the capability to deliver. Multiple retailers called us within the couple of weeks from that transaction, and they wanted to meet. And you know, you could tell they were looking to acquire somebody.
Hmm. Are these retailers like Publix and other brands, essentially, that just saw what happened with Whole Foods and thought, hey, we can do that too?
Yes. If you name the major retailer, we probably spoke to them during that time.
Was there anyone who stood out?
Certainly Target.
The Exit, coming up after this. This episode of The Pitch is brought to you exclusively by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. You've heard it before. You've even heard me say it earlier in this very episode. But it's more than just a tagline, because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves, working and living in your community. That means they know the specific stresses your small business might be facing and can be there in an instant to make your needs a priority. So let's say it one more time. All together now. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Welcome back. Bill Smith thought that Amazon buying Whole Foods could mean the end of his business. But a rising tide does float all ships. Almost immediately, grocery chains started reaching out.
If you name the major retailer, we probably spoke to them during that time.
Was there anyone who stood out?
Certainly Target.
You're just saying that.
No, I'm serious. So when I started the company, my vision was I wanted to deliver from Target. I mean, one of the billboards I had actually had Target on it, showing kind of we had a spaceship over Target. It was one of our ads. So it was always my dream to work with Target. And they called and wanted to meet. And they didn't initially say they wanted to buy the company. They said, we want to talk about partnering. And so I flew up to Minneapolis and met with their team and talked through a partnership. And it just kind of developed over a matter of weeks from partnership to, hey, would you be interested in an acquisition?
What was your immediate gut reaction when they proposed buying you?
Yeah. So I think the first thing was, what do you want to do? What's your plan with this? Some companies can do an acquisition and they will absorb the company they're acquiring and integrate it in, and you kind of lose your identity. And a lot of times these acquisitions become failed acquisitions.
Yep. Been there.
Yep. Target said, hey, we actually want to acquire you, and we want you to keep serving your partners and grow your marketplace and add other retailers. And that was really important to me, because all of these retailers that I had signed up to partner with were people I really loved and cared about. So I didn't want to sell to Target and say, hey guys, we're not going to partner with you anymore. That would have been bad. So they said, we're going to grow your marketplace. And that was a really unique pitch that no one else had for us. And they said they're going to wanted to retain the brand. They wanted to stay in Birmingham. They wanted to keep the team.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's really every entrepreneur's dream.
When they originally made the offer to buy you, what did your investors, board members, what did they all think?
So we had a lot of healthy conversation about this. And actually one of my investors said, let me let you talk to some bankers about going public. And I started to go down that path and see what it would be like. And then other investors said, you know, this is a life-changing amount of money. This will make a generational impact on your family. You've already proven that you can start other businesses. You should strongly consider doing this deal.
What did Graycroft think? I mean, they had just led the Series B. So presumably they had a price they wanted you to hit. Like, were they okay with you selling at that point?
My partner there really pushed me to consider not selling.
Mm-hmm.
He said, look, I'm going to do whatever you want to do. I mean, you're the CEO and, you know, whatever you want to do, we're with you. And that was a tough decision to make. But ultimately what I came back to was if I had continued as an independent company and something else had changed or not worked out, how would I feel if I hadn't taken the $550 million? It was actually a little more than that. That was on the table in an all cash deal. And
yeah.
I said, you know, this makes sense to do this deal, because once I've done this deal, then on the next company or the next one, I can hold the cards as long as I want to. And I can do all types of other deals, buy companies, start them up, whatever. I'll have so many options available to me.
Like a true game changer, like life changing, but then it changes how you play the game as you build new companies.
It did. It really did. And it'll be a change for my lifetime and my kids and other family members that were investors and friends.
Yeah.
So many of my employees and friends made millions in the process. People bought houses and all kinds of cool stuff happened because of that deal.
Is that the most satisfying part?
100%.
Can you describe the day Shipt sold to Target? You were 32 years old and the company sold for over $550 million. Like, what was that day like?
Oh, it was a great day. So it was December 17th. And I'll back up before the day it was announced, because the day it was supposed to be announced was actually December 18th. And I got a call from the COO of Target and he said, hey, we actually want to announce this a day early. We're afraid it's going to leak. So we're sending our plane down to pick you up this afternoon, flying you to Minneapolis. We're announcing tomorrow morning. So I jumped on the Target plane and flew up there. And the next morning I'm on a call. We're doing interviews with the CEO of Target and myself. We're interviewing with CNBC and Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal. All these things started at 6 a.m. in the Target headquarters. I'm watching the sun come up. I'm in this amazing office. This is a dream. This is everything an entrepreneur dreams about doing, and I'm doing it. In the Target headquarters, they have a bullseye, the dog, the mascot, built out of Legos.
Oh, that's
huge.
Awesome.
It's the size of me.
With the Target over its eye.
Yep, you can picture it. So I just made a selfie video right there in front of Bullseye and told the team, you know, that we're being acquired by Target and we're going to expand our marketplace and they're going to invest money and everybody's job secure and they're going to grow in Birmingham and the whole thing. And I uploaded it to Slack. It was like an at channel, exciting news.
Yeah.
Well, everybody in the office is trying to download this thing at the same time. Only a few of them could get it, and somebody actually videoed the reaction in the office.
Oh my God.
I don't know. Mine is still loading. There's 500.
Sorry, I lied. I think it's an
extra. Did we buy Target?
Did we? No.
Oh my gosh.
And so all these people are gathered around like somebody's phone and somebody, you know, somebody else's computer over here and another laptop there, and they're all watching the video, but everybody's being really quiet so they can hear what I'm saying, and people are laughing with excitement and high-fiving and all that. And then I flew in that afternoon with the CEO and the COO of Target, and Bullseye came as well. The real live Bullseye came, and they were taking photos. Everybody got to take photos with Bullseye, and I had my my kids there and my wife and my father was there. And it was just a really cool, cool, cool day.
That's awesome. How long did you stay at Shipt afterwards?
I stayed on for about a year and a half afterwards.
This is about the time that, you know, you retire, maybe start a VC fund, start sipping some Mai Tais, put your toes in the water, ass in the sand, no worries in the world, cold beer in your hand. Right, Bill? Right?
It's hard to... A lot of people would do that. A lot of my friends that have sold their businesses do that, but not for me. I was only 32 at the time, so I had a lot of living left to do.
How did it feel to leave, to finally let go of this thing?
It's really not, I don't find it incredibly difficult because once I've moved on in my mind, it was time. My last day was on a Friday and I had another office. And on Monday, I went back to the new office with my team of 7 or 8 people. And I had no idea what I was going to build, but I just told these folks, I want to start another company. I'd like you to be on my founding team. I think it was April 1st, 2019. And everybody showed up in a room and it was like, all right, what are we going to do? And so I started working through my list of business ideas that I keep on my phone.
Do you have the phone there with you?
I do. I have it here.
Would you mind taking it out and reading a couple of those ideas for us?
Sure. Let me start with the first two ideas. One was to create a commercial soap and paper dispenser that's connected to Wi-Fi. You see places you go in a restaurant and the paper towels are out or the soap's out or whatever. And that's an annoying problem which would be very easily solved through just connectivity. Then you want to hear the next one?
Yeah.
Along those same lines, had an idea for a company that just maintains restrooms for like chain restaurants. You know, if you go in these chains, the maintenance isn't right and things aren't, you know, it just needs a whole makeover every 6 months. And I thought, man, somebody could create a company that does that.
One of the ideas in this list is the idea for Landing, your new company?
It is.
What was that idea?
When I was building Shipt, I needed to have a home in San Francisco and experienced all the pain of trying to find an apartment on Craigslist and calling different realtors. And I had to get a cashier's check and fill out a paper application and meet Xfinity to, you know, then get the furniture, all this stuff. And I thought, this is insane. And if you know anything about apartments, half of apartment renters move every year. And I thought, this is ridiculous. So I put that on my list. I put on my list a solution for flexible apartment living.
It's so interesting. I've met a lot of entrepreneurs who've done really, really well, where they're almost more afraid of failure after having success because they realize how lucky they got. So it's fascinating to see you just continue to start businesses. Like, are you not afraid of failure?
Well, I don't want to fail. People talk about embracing failure. I don't embrace failure. I don't want to feel it. I mean, I don't think anybody wants to fail, but I'm okay with it. And I've had failures. You know, we kind of gloss over that when we're having these conversations, but there's things I've tried inside my company, many, many, many things inside my businesses that haven't worked. But I think if you're going to play the game and you want to win, you have to be okay with failure because it's a requirement. You know, it's not possible to avoid it.
Do you have any regrets about Shipt? Anything you would have done differently?
I would have gone faster, actually. I think in hindsight, I think we could have done more. Even the company, I mean, it started and sold within 3 years.
So you think you could have gone faster? I mean, the company was going 300%. That's absurdly fast.
I think we could have done more. I really do.
Can you imagine a point where there's Bill Smith not running a business?
I think about that. I've thought about that a lot. I don't believe that'll happen. That's not my desire. Now, when I fast forward 20 years, 25 years down the road, I'm 38 today. And I think, you know, would I be a CEO at 65? Do I want to be doing this every single day? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think I'll always own businesses. And that's something that I, you know, really am interested in. I bought a business recently. I don't run it. Someone else runs it. And it's really more like an investment. But I can see making that transition at some point to owning companies, working closely with the president or the CEO, coaching them and kind of providing that guidance, but not being in one single business every single day.
I mean, it just strikes me as interesting. I mean, you've got a bank account like you've never seen before. You're three companies in. Do you know why? Like, I still don't quite understand why keep going.
I mean, when it comes down to it, I think it's what God made me to do. This is what I was built for, is to solve problems in the world and build businesses and create opportunities for people. That's my highest and best use.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps bringing me back to it.
You feel like it's your purpose.
Yeah.
Thinking back on that moment when you were a teenager and your dad decided to support you dropping out of school and building a business, do you think any of this would have happened without your dad letting you drop out of school?
No, I don't know what would have happened. I mean, maybe I would have figured something else out. But the timing of everything that I created, if you just rolled it forward 2 years, it wouldn't have worked. Insight wouldn't have worked. Shipt would have completely missed the window. Even landing, we would have missed the window because there's just timing. Timing is such a key piece of everything. And if I had just rolled the clock forward 2 years and said, I'm going to finish high school but not go to college, I would have missed out. If I would have gone to college, then I would have missed out. You know, that would have been 6 years. So who knows? Now, maybe I would have created something that's even greater than what I built. Who knows? But I'll take the cards I was dealt.
Three exits for the price of one. You're welcome. I'd love to hear your feedback on the exit. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share this episode. The more people listen, the more episodes we can make. Let us know how you liked it. You can tell us over on our free group chat on Patreon or comment on Instagram or YouTube. Next week on the show, we're back to pitches. And this one's coming from my job.
What Podcast AI does is it lets podcast producers become 10 times more productive.
How much are you charging the pitch?
We're charging $99, and Josh came in right before we doubled our prices.
What's keeping something like a Restream from just going like, yep, we do all this AI now stuff too?
So there's a lot of these older companies that are tacking on AI, and that's kind of the issue. They're tacking it on.
You built this really quickly. What's to stop anybody else from doing this? What's the moat?
How do you build a moat when you're building with AI? That's next week on The Pitch. Like, comment, subscribe, and turn on notifications so you don't miss it. This episode was made by me, Josh Muccio, Lisa Muccio, Anna Ladd, Enoch Kim, and Jackie Papanair. Music in this episode is by Memory Palace, Anders, The Musemaker, Breakmaster Cylinder, Our Many Stars, and Purple Moons. The Pitch is made in partnership with the Vox Media Podcast Network. This episode of The Pitch was brought to you exclusively by State Farm. If you've been listening to our show for a while, you can tell every business owner has a unique set of problems to solve. That's why small business owners want someone to not only understand, but prioritize their needs. State Farm agents are small business owners too, so they know how to help you choose personalized plans to fit your needs and budget. They get it, plain and simple. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.